Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Eric Engelman, welcome to Startup Stories. You founded and grew a company in Cedar Rapids before your journey into the startup community building. Tell us a little bit about that journey in building that first company.
Yeah, I was fresh out of college and had a job in Cedar Rapids building websites in 1997 when that was sparkly and new and magic. And 2 years into that, at age 24, I was engaged to be married, and I had just about 2 years of work experience under my belt, and I knew everything I needed to know to start my own business and do it well. So I quit. I had a buddy of mine go with me to start what became Geonetric. It was at the time a website development agency, but we quickly wound up focusing on healthcare. And to be totally honest, it's a miracle we survived the first year of that was like the dot-com implosion happened about 6 months after we started. And it was a rough time, but you know, we happened to have the right skills at the right time. It was, you know, a lot of luck, honestly.
Well, they say timing's everything, but that doesn't always mean it's good timing.
Yes.
So, but you made it through. You know, I met you at one of the first big events, either in Iowa City or Cedar Rapids. I don't remember which event it was, but you told me then about your plans for what became Nuboco. And I know you're not as involved with Nuboco anymore as you once were, but looking back, because it was really very different what you were trying to do and very special. If you look back at what you thought your original plan was back in the days and where things are today, what ended up working as planned? What went right? What did you feel good about?
Yeah, there's a lot in that question. So this would have probably been 15 years into my journey at Geonetric, and we'd grown that business, been on Inc. 5000 list a bunch of times, and you know, had a lot of fun. But honestly, once it got to 60, 70, 80 employees, you know, as the CEO, I was spending my time on administrative stuff and HR stuff, and I guess I missed creating something new. So the itch started to scratch, I guess. A good friend of mine named Andy Stoll, you might know him. He took me to Nashville. We went on a drive together. He and Amanda West and I went to Nashville to see the opening of the Entrepreneur Center there. Had a friend that had started an accelerator in Lincoln, Nebraska. I knew what you guys were doing, some really cool stuff at the time, like Startup City. And I was like, you know what? There's nobody in Cedar Rapids talking this way. In fact, the big spark was Brad Feld, who I had no idea who he was when he got on stage at, it was Think Iowa. He gets on stage and he starts talking, and I was like, I've never heard anybody talk like this guy. So I get his book, devour it, and pretty much within the next couple of months decided I wanted to leave to create Nuboco. Nuboco is a 501c3. We decided to create it as a nonprofit entity with a tiny seed fund attached to it. We started it it officially launched in August of 2014. The idea from the beginning was to support startups in Eastern Iowa, primarily focused on basically just ecosystem building and figuring out a way to fund a job that would let us, you know, really do some of those things that we were seeing in Nashville and Lincoln and in Des Moines. In our first IRS application that we wrote for nonprofit status, we said, we're going to support startups, we're going to do technical education, and we're going to help companies innovate. One of the three of those happened in 2014. The others got built out over the next 5-6 years. We hired an incredible team over the time. I think it's 25 employees now. They run a code school, a co-working space, prototyping labs. They do corporate innovation consulting, technical consulting for companies big and small. Really advanced stuff they're into. We do computer science education in schools as part of a long-term play to build the technology workforce. So we get our fingers into lots of stuff, but I think they summarize it as helping Iowa be more resilient in a changing world. You know, how do we take advantage of the situation that maybe the world is in and the changes that are happening and be stronger because of it? And I think they're doing some really incredible work.
And I know they are. I actually follow what they do pretty closely. So along the way, what pivots did you have to make with Nuboco?
You know, it's there were many, although it's not a pivot maybe in the way a startup would sense, where you sort of start down one path and wind up 90 degrees off. It was more of kind of dipping your toe in and feeling like, oh, it's not the right time to start that. We should come back in a year. We did a few things like with summer camps for kids, STEM camps for kids, and quickly realized this was not in our mission, or at least not worth the trouble to put it on. And as you know, we've tried a couple of times different ways to light up the angel investor ecosystem and learned some tough lessons on how hard that is to do. So, you know, not everything maybe worked as we planned, but I think the way we would sort of build one piece on top of the other and kind of stack them so that the synergies between them, so to speak, would help them, worked out really, really well over time.
You know, I'm glad you said that about some of the stuff didn't work. I always would get frustrated. People would get worried about failure. I'm like, people, you got to go fail. I mean, you got to go try this stuff. I can't. I've got a long list of stuff that didn't work, you know, out of my time in Des Moines. And it is how you find success. I mean, Startup City, you mentioned earlier, if you asked Tej DeLon and Christian Renaud, was it a success or a failure? They'll say, well, it was a failure. You know, we couldn't make it self-sustaining. We couldn't do what we wanted to do. You know, we weren't able to help the number of companies we wanted to help, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and they actually did, I think you know this, they did a post-mortem on it and wrote a document about what worked and what didn't. And that actually, that document started what is now known as the Global Insurance Accelerator, which remains one of the top accelerators in the world for insurtech. Mm-hmm. We didn't ever think about the insurance technology world when we were doing Startup City. You know, that wasn't what it was about. Now, we got lucky. One thing came out of it really strong was Plains Angels, to your point, and they are hard to keep going. And I remember the times when you were working on, very hard working on getting an angel group in Cedar Rapids and how hard that was. And based on that, I mean, that had to have led you a little bit to this fund. Can you talk a little bit about when did you first start thinking about doing a fund?
Yeah, that's there were several things that kind of drove me to where ISA Ventures, which is the new fund, how that came to be. One was our first fund was a whopping $1.7 million, which at the time felt like a huge number, but in retrospect, it's so adorable. Over 5 years, we invested that into 41 companies, usually 50,000 checks. It was intended to be the craziest, highest risk stuff at the top of the funnel, so that a few years later, there'd be something to invest in, because Eastern Iowa didn't exactly have a lot of sources for early stage capital. And, you know, I think from a macro perspective, that worked. We have a pretty serious set of investment opportunities, many of which we invested in, that now the new fund has invested in. So some of it was intentional, if I can maybe make it sound like I planned it that way. You know, we certainly knew that, you know, this first step that we were doing was just a step on a much, much larger journey. I think the other big thing, though, was NuboCo was starting to reach kind of that same point that Geonetric did, right? It was 20, 25 people. I got the itch again to try something a little bit different. But the mission of it still excited me, still does today. And I wanted a way to support the same direction, but maybe do it a little differently. And I went back to some of the LPs in that first little baby fund, and I said, kind of learned a lot. I think we're going to make some money. It's, you know, nobody's going to retire on this alone, but, you know, we're going to make some money on this. Right. I think by the time it's all said and done, I want to do it again. Would you be interested? And one of the investors in that, Steve Gray, who you might know, he said, yeah, but if I'm in, let's do this. But if we do, we got to go a lot bigger. I was thinking 5 million sounded like a really insurmountable goal. He pushed me for 20 to 30. I think we compromised in the 20-ish range, which is where we'll probably wind up by the time we're done. But this new fund is very different. So it lets us accomplish a mission that the first fund never did. That one was just, you know, always first money in almost every case. This new fund can invest multiple times. It's intended to be something where we might seed somebody right. 25K that really just buys them a couple of months to see if there's something there. If it is, we can spot up another 75, then a quarter of a million, then $1 million, you know, maybe a year or two down the road if they're really taking off. From both an investment strategy perspective, but also from an ecosystem perspective, they both work pretty closely together. They're kind of hand-in-hand strategies. And that really excited me to figure out how to do that and put it in place.
And you just mentioned Steve Gray, and I lived in Cedar Rapids for 20 years. A lot of people don't know that, but I knew of Steve Gray from his work in several of the major tech companies that were over there in the telecom space. And Steve is extremely well known as an investor, as an executive in the business world. Is he still with the Carlyle Group, which is one of the most fundamentally sound companies and profitable, capable companies there is. Having somebody like that on your side is a big deal. Were there, without using names, I mean, were you able to get some of the other people in the community that were the, you know, the high net worth, high respect people to kind of help you along this journey?
Yeah, most of the limited partners from the first fund re-upped in this one, which I think was a vote of confidence, even though I hadn't returned all their money back to them, still haven't yet, but they know the time horizon we're talking about. But yeah, the new fund ended up, we've got about 85 LPs right now in total. And a couple of those are institutional ones, big companies like United Fire Group, as an example. Green State, Credit Union, and Alliant Energy are kind of institutional. And then we've got a bunch, everything else is high net worth. And I think what's interesting about it is in that group of high net worth, there's a few, if you sort of took the names of Cedar Rapids and you, to a certain extent, Iowa City, it's kind of the names you'd expect. But the what I really wanted was people who are not the names you'd expect. It's people often younger, or maybe who haven't reached that point where, you know, dropping a few $100,000 in a venture fund is not in the cards. Right. So it was part of my way to build, you know, an investor class, an investor ecosystem that had probably never invested in this kind of high risk asset class before.
Right.
And create a way to do it that was predictable and understandable and as transparent as we could make it.
Well, what's important to note here is, you know, the hard part about being an angel, and I've been an angel personally. My wife and I have been doing angel investing for 8 or 10 years, and I think we've made over 40 investments. I don't know the exact number. It's a lot of work to do the diligence, to look at deals. And I'm not talking about helping run Plains Angels. I'm not talking about my personal work of saying, do I want to be a deal? And so that's why most angel groups tend to follow a fund or in different investors, because we're just not there to do the deal work. What you're taking on with a fund means you are the one doing the legwork and doing the diligence work. And I think that one of the benefits of having a fund versus a group is that by doing it that way, you can bring in a lot of other people that don't have the time. They'd like to be in the class. They'd like to try the investment class. They'd like to be involved with tech startups, but they don't have the hours and hours and hours to diligence each deal. You know, it's just not there. So let me ask you, once you started, once you said, okay, we're going to do this, how long did it take you to raise the fund?
Well, technically not done yet. So I guess I can answer that question better later. You know, we started, I want to say it was the summer of 2019 in earnest, had the paperwork figured out, had the structures sorted out, had created kind of the initial deck that I would use to tell the story of what we were attempting to do. Got a lot of interest really, really quickly. And then I think kind of hit a plateau where it came a little more slowly. And I was kind of, you know, picking the last few off to get to the minimum. We set a minimum threshold of 15 million. It is a classified as a Iowa Innovation Fund. So the tax credits all the investors get special tax credits from the state of Iowa that are pretty lucrative, to be honest. 15 million was the minimum threshold. And that, so we set everything around that. I was sure that we were well on our way to 30. It would just take me time to get there. And we had set a initial closing. I started thinking, you know, January, it might happen. Had a little bit of delay of 2020. And then by the time we got to March, I was like, all right, we're going to do this by the end of March. There's this weird pandemic thing, but it's not really in Iowa yet. No worries. And then, of course, everything like hit the skids. Whatever that day was, it was like the 20th or so of March, somewhere in that range. Had like 3 phone calls from some of the bigger LPs saying, hey, maybe we should wait a little bit and see what happens before we hit this closing. Are we still going to do this? And it just felt like the wrong time. So honestly, we put the whole thing on pause for about maybe almost 90 days and then pulled it back together and finished that initial closing in July.
Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense, because I think we always, the partnership, we always said March 17th was our big day. It was like, okay, shut it down.
Yeah.
Right. Go virtual today. Yep. Now go home. If you're not already at home, go home. And of course the markets reacted strong. And the thing about these kinds of investors is, being intelligent people, most of their money is not in high risk startups. It's mostly in the stock market or other large corporations. And everybody got worried really fast that the market was going to cave, that we're going to see 08 again. And thankfully we didn't. And it took that 90 days to sort out that now the market's kind of okay. And a whole lot of companies are quickly discovering we don't all have to be in the same building. So doing that in less than 2 years, that's really quite good. If you take out the 90-day pandemic delay, to raise your first fund in less than 2 years, well done for you, because that is hard to do. And speaking of hard to do, with all of your experience, what did raising a fund teach you?
I feel like the big lesson I took away from it was how important having a team was. I was technically still employed at NuboCo at the time we were doing this, but I stepped down my salary. We were like sort of in the transition process. My colleague, Frank Camp, who's our general counsel, he's an attorney and helping think through all the structural legal things, he's an amazing colleague. But it's sort of, once it kind of got legs, it's a lonely job. I mean, I'm mostly representing this, and we had a lot of assists from Steve and other people and Frank, but you know, I'm sort of in the middle of all this stuff. And, the big lesson, especially as it came into fruition after the initial closing was, oh God, we need a team. We got to find the right people so we can do all the things, because you know me, I'm not exactly the detail guy. Dotting every I, crossing every T, scrubbing through spreadsheets is maybe not my thing. And kind of ironically, I'm kind of an introvert too. So as we thought about, all right, what does the team need to look like? Putting that team back together of what we needed to operate it the way I'd envisioned it, the way we'd talked about it, was one of those lessons of just not, you really can't do it all. You really do need to put that team together. And it was an obvious reminder in retrospect, but it was maybe 6 months there where it was completely overwhelming and just feeling, still feel a little bit of imposter syndrome as you maybe figure things out, but still, it was, just the humility of, right, this is why you put a good team of people with the right different perspectives together. So,
yeah. So it sounds like the fund is still open. If there are listeners out here that are accredited investors, of course, and are interested, they can reach out to you. Real quick, what is the website for the fund?
ISAventures.com.
Perfect. Okay. Can you tell a little bit? You talked about the size of the fund and the some of the invest, the makeups. It sounds like it's mostly individual LPs. What is the focus of the fund? Is it Iowa only? What are you looking to invest in? And kind of go deep there for me a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great question. The fund is invests only in companies with a significant presence in the state of Iowa. There's particular definitions we have to meet as part of that innovation fund criteria. More or less, it needs to be an Iowa company. On top of that, so I think the way I think of it is, all right, we've got this pool of potential opportunities that's kind of small in the scheme of things. So we need to be at every single one. We need to know all of these people. But within that, we're really looking for highly scalable, large end market sizes, technology based businesses in a sector where we have strength as a state, as an organization that we can help you. In our first fund, I will say it's not focused on a single industry per se, but obviously we'll have strengths in things like agriculture, healthcare, finance, those sorts of things, or things we know people who I could text 10 people tomorrow and have a conversation the next day about those kinds of things. That's really important to us. In that first fund, we were also agnostic and not very picky about the industry they were in. And honestly, we got our asses handed to us many times when we strayed from things where, they were things we just knew about. We knew people who knew things about them. So,
So Iowa only, is there kind of a, are there a couple of companies you can talk about that you have already invested in? Is there any public that you can talk about?
Yeah, actually there's, I think we've done 14, we'll have a 15th investment done momentarily. To be honest, it kind of runs a pretty wide gamut. A little bit of backstory. In the spring of 2020, when we thought the closing was imminent, we had to make this gut decision to proceed with the accelerator program for extremely early stage companies in March. We had worked this arrangement out with ACT to run it on their campus. It was focused on education related companies. And it was sort of like, oh, it's going to be fine. Let's just proceed. I think it started March 2nd or whatever that Monday was. So we had basically four deals committed before the fund even closed. which made it interesting. So those four companies include a company out of the Quad Cities called Tuition Fit, as an example. Basically, it's an online data repository for what people actually pay when they go to college. People upload their offer letters to this repository, and you search for it. College search professionals and advisors and counselors, financial advisors can use it. It's a really cool little business. So we're in the process of investing again into that company. We invested in Rentizo, which had been part of our prior fund. I've known the owner of that company for a long time. Drone-based application of ag inputs, autonomous drone stuff. It's super cool technology. Tractor Zoom, who you probably know, Kyle and his team.
Very well.
Nebulum out of Ames, doing some really cool stuff. And so it's a variety. It has a little bit of a tilt toward agriculture, I would say, at the moment. But I think that will change really quickly. We've got some other ones coming on that are not in the ag industry. So,
well, and you were talking about some of them. There are a wave of ag tech companies in central Iowa right now. There's a real, and nothing against eastern Iowa and the other areas, but there's just a wave of them. I mean, it's, I've not seen it like that in the 14, 15 years I've been involved in the ecosystem. I have not seen it. So it's not surprising at all. And I know now you have some teammates. Can you share who those teammates are and what they're doing, what their responsibilities are?
Yeah, sure thing. So we've hired, we have a total of four people on the team. I work there full time as of November of 2020. Frank Camp is there almost full time. And honestly, having a lawyer sitting next to you is a godsend on this sort of thing, because we try to push things pretty hard and figure out creative ways to do things. And he gets to tell me no sometimes, but that's good.
Yep. You need that.
We do. And I definitely push him sometimes to say, can we find a way to make that work? the first hire we made was Michaela Sullivan. You might know her. She'd run a company in Ames called Kinosol. And she's incredible. She's deep in the Ames ecosystem in particular, which is great. She was an entrepreneur in residence at some of their startup programming up there. She knows all the Ames founders really well. So that was super valuable. She's mostly focused on outreach and doing the initial intake of founders. So far she's been amazing. The other hire was Brittany Brown. Brittany joined us as our analyst. And you know, there's not that many people in Iowa who have done venture and private equity investing before. There's just not that many people. And we had some great candidates, but Brittany stood out from our candidates. She had previously worked with Great America Leasing Corporation, but she was basically working on a mezzanine debt fund that they were invested in and was doing most of the analysis. So it's like, oh, okay, that's not exactly the same, but it's awfully close. And
it's close.
Yeah, she's been amazing, just sort of taking things apart and letting us see things that I can kind of intuitively sort out in my mind, but you know, she has that mind for, you know, digging into the spreadsheets in a way that I do not have the patience to do. And so it's kind of this well-rounded group of people. You know, we've got Michaela sort of on the outside doing a lot of the sort of extroverted relationship building, getting things started. Brittany doing a lot of the analysis and, you know, scratching into them. And then you might know Alex Taylor. Alex is technically not an employee of the venture fund. He's an employee at NuoCo, but he's the managing director of the accelerator program. And so we kind of all work together because everybody we invest in at least participates in some of the programming that we do. And we bring that as a resource to help them either, you know, make good decisions, to hire talent from our code school, to connect with corporate innovators that might be customers for their products. It's all part of that broader story. So that group of five really is focused on this stuff.
You know, and I've actually seen one of your term sheets because you're looking at investing in a company that I'm an early investor in. We'll not disclose who that is, but I thought it was very innovative what you're doing in the term sheet. I wonder if you're comfortable to talk about some of the things that you require of the company if they take money from your fund.
Yeah, there's a couple of pieces to that. And I in the last 6 months, so the fund's been up and running for just about 6 months now. The intent of it was, hey, look, we're going to invest money in you, but like, if you just want a check, like there's a lot of places to get a check and that's not really what we're here for. We at least want you to be able to take advantage of the other services that we've got. So the sort of standard arrangement for most of the companies, and these are especially true at the ones where we're investing a fairly small amount, like $100,000, they're usually going to be participating in a program, in the Iowa Startup Accelerator program. And this is different from maybe what you remember, because the past 6 years, it was only at early stage, like pre-revenue in almost every case, companies. We've now kind of broken it into four levels, so to speak, of programming getting progressively more flexible. So by the time you're up and running and a going concern, you know, it's maybe quarterly check-ins and, you know, some metrics collection, and then a board meeting probably in some of those cases if we're on the board, and then a few other smaller things. But for the ones that are younger, you know, we want to help give them some structure. And, you know, earlier on, you talked about how important failure was. And I wanted to maybe riff on that really quickly, because one of the things that we really take to heart is agility. And I'm sort of a dork on the agile software development stuff that, you know, for the last decade, I've really taken that and expanded it way beyond software. It's really a mindset for leading people. And that's actually the very first thing we teach them, is how to work in very small iterations to test for failure really quickly and to make that a very open and transparent process with your team, even if it's just one or two or three people. So like part of the programming that we offer for companies that comes with the money that we invest is this opportunity to learn those things, to be coached on those things, to have access to educational workshops that we're doing, to get first look at the students that are coming out of the code school, or now our digital marketing school that we just finished last fall. We're really trying to find ways to be valuable to startups and the ecosystem at large. So we usually predicate the money on some kind of a way to work with us.
Yeah, I think it's wise, because, you know, the part of putting that out there is seeing if people are okay with it. People will say, won't say anything, but they'll say a lot of things to get money. And then whether or not they'll do those things, or whether they understand. So putting in writing that you will have a certain amount of mentoring and so on, I think it's really smart. It's a way of weeding out those who all they want to check, and they don't ever want to talk to you again. And I've unfortunately had a couple of deals that turned into that. It's like, all I want to check, I don't want to see you again, go away, I'm not going to return your emails. It's like, whoa, wow, I hope you never want money again.
Yeah, that's a big piece of it. And, you know, this fund has an assumption that we're going to invest more than once in the same company. And so it's intended to be a relationship that's valuable. We had the same situation with our prior fund. And I was like, I'm not interested in that. But I will say too, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback from founders already. Like, hey, these three things sound great. That one, I don't know. Like, maybe that's a heavy commitment for me. And we've tried to figure out ways to adjust things for reasonable. Certainly for ones who already have access to a resource like that. You know, we've got a couple, just as an example, participated in, you know, Egg Startup Engine in Ames, for example. And they've got like some CEO groups that they meet regularly. I don't want to make you do ours just out of pride or ego. Like, I'll find a way to make that work for you. So yeah, we're trying to.
You have to be flexible, right? You do. So let's say Michaela finds a company and the initial view is good. Walk us through kind of the steps that get to a check, and not at the detail, but just higher level. You know, is there, you know, once the due diligence is done, the financials done, then do you make your own decisions? Is there a group of people to help you? Do you have advisors? Tell us a little more about how that process works.
That's a great question. So for the past 6 months, when we lit up the fund in July, and I'd already had some deals kind of in the pipeline, it was a little more cowboy than it should have been, probably, as we sort of finished some things, because it was just me. But as the team kind of came together, we worked together to build a process that really lays out the balance between, we really want to be fast. Speed matters to us, and we are honestly not fast right now. Like, we know that it's kind of putting the pieces together the way we want. But typically there's an initial intake and screening call. Michaela usually solos those and just kind of has a set of questions that's always the same. Says, hey, I'm looking for these kinds of things. Tell me about them. If we decide to take a look, which often we do just because we're interested in seeing people, we call it our deep dive call. It's typically 2 to 2.5 hours. We provide in advance, here are the things we're looking for. We give them a week or two to think about it, and we expect them to be prepared. If they come into it and they don't have something we clearly asked for, like, it's not going to happen. And it's been sort of surprising. We try really hard to communicate that, pretty much what I just said to you. Like, if you need more time, we can delay it, no problem. But just put these things together, because when typically it's me and Michaela, often Brittany's on the call as well. And sometimes Frank, if they say if they have particular intellectual property things, he's big into IP stuff. Anyways, and we have a Google Doc, and on in the background, like we're typing to each other our thoughts as we're going down this monster checklist that we gave them in advance to say, tell us about how do you actually protect your business from a new entrant? Do you have a moat, and how does it work, and how likely would you be to build it over time, and will it get stronger or weaker? And often, you know, just blow right past it. And so then we're typing, like putting a zero on that one. If it's a bigger deal, and the way we've kind of worked this out with our investment committee, we have five people on there. Mr. Gray is one of the five. Bruce Lehrman, who's a pretty well-known founder in Cedar Rapids, is also on there. Cami Greif was one of the co-founders of Tax Act. Pankaj Manga, who's the CEO at Channel Fusion in Cedar Rapids, he's also on the TCC for the state. So he sees a lot of them before we do. And then Nate Kading, who a lot of people know as a football guy, but he's actually a prolific angel investor, real estate guy. He's doing some really cool stuff in Iowa City. That's our investment committee. And for any deal that's typically over $100,000, we route it past them for input and feedback. And even on the big ones, we pretty much ask them to give us a vote. And it'd be kind of stupid to have an investment committee where we overrule them. So the way we actually operate is on any of the bigger ones, we have a formal conversation with them and pitch the often have the founder pitch to them and answer their questions. We're preparing our first seven-figure deal right now. Like I'm going to send the deal memo to them later today. And it's, you know, a 60, 70 slide due diligence deck. I've never done anything like it in my life. It is cool. And it's really interesting, you know, probably 13 or 14 reference calls as part of the deal to customers, prospective customers, to prior investors, to employees, former employees. Like it's wild. So
yeah, I'm going to stop you there. For those of you that are listening to this, do not underestimate what a real due diligence process is. Do not. We will background check you. We will call people you didn't tell us to call. We'll find people that know you from your past. We will, I mean, we have to. I mean, you're talking about a seven-digit deal. That's $1 million+. Yeah. We're not insane. we're going to be very careful about this.
That's so true. And, you know, there's suddenly this thought, you know, in the first fund we did, you know, we were investing $20,000 and, you know, they had nothing typically at the time to do diligence about beyond some basic, do you own the intellectual property that you're trying to put in the business? And now it's, you know, we're reviewing contracts with customers and making sure that things are actually what's really there. And so, you know, it's a massive amount of work. And, you know, I think that's one of the things we're working on scaling. We want to be fast, but the process is inherently slow and manual. If you want to do these kinds of calls, and you know, we can write a check from $25,000 up to typically about $1 million is probably the largest single check you would write. And so, you know, the process is obviously differs quite a bit between those extremes, and trying to make it as fast as possible at the smaller end and as thorough as possible at the other end is a fun challenge.
Right. So, tell me a little bit about the goals for the rest of 21. I mean, here we are in January, January 20, by the way, and it is 2020 is over. Things are looking up. We have a vaccine, all those things. What do you, you've got this 15 plus million, you're trying to get some more of it closed out if you can, but what are your goals? Are you, will the fund close out this year? Are you going to deploy the whole fund this year? Kind of give us a sense of the time horizon.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think our fund is a little bit unusual. You know, a lot of venture funds have it set up where you commit some money in advance and then the fund can essentially call the money from you when it has a deal. You know, a lot of our investors, as I mentioned, that they're not as maybe far along in the idea of just randomly carving an $80,000 check on a Tuesday or something is not going to happen. And so the way we set up the fund is that basically you commit a certain amount in advance. We're going to take that amount evenly each year for 5 years. So right now we have about $3 million a year to work with. And so the fund is set up to it's essentially operate at that cadence. And so for the way the fund is set up, the minimum is $100,000 commitment. So it's $20,000 a year. Most of the investors are significantly more than that, but that's how we're setting it up. So we will deploy it over 5 years. As in a pretty planned sequence.
So will there be a fund too?
You know, I hope so. I think we have to do a good job with this one to get there. I'm pretty confident that that in the big picture plan, that is very much the intention, right? This fund is about 10 times the size of the last one. So I would hope the next one is about 10 times the size of this one because we're going to have one heck of a pipeline. I mean, the quality of the deals, you mentioned the ag stuff. There are some really incredible companies at the University of Iowa as well in the medical space that are really exciting. And then there's kind of just other people doing cool stuff. And if we can fund these companies and we can see the growth we want to see, you know, the idea of, you know, $20 and $50 million rounds in Iowa, there's been a handful. You know, I think that's a plausible thing. That'll be maybe common in 5 years.
Yeah, I'll just follow up a little bit on that because 10 years ago, if we saw $5 million of capital raised in all of Central Iowa and probably all the state, we'd all be cheering.
Right.
And I think there was a quarter last year, I want to say Q3 last year, I think $60 million got raised just in Central Iowa. Yeah. And it wasn't one deal. And Q4, I was sitting in a restaurant before we left Iowa. I was sitting in a restaurant with my wife. And the waitress came over and said, you know, and of course, COVID restrictions, all said, your bill has been paid. I'm like, what? Because, yeah, there's two guys in the back just paid your check. And I'm like, so pretty soon one of them walked up and it was one of their pair of people that run the startup. And it was just a goodbye thing because they knew I was leaving and all that. The other one called me the next day and said, I really want to apologize for you, but I was closing a $5 million investment at that table. I couldn't come over and say hi. And I thought, you know, this area's made it because if you've got people closing $5 million deals over dinner in a pandemic, and I think it was snowing out, and it was December, which is a horrible month to try to raise money. I'm like, okay, we have gone somewhere. Some good stuff has happened. So my bet is you will have a fund too.
I think that really speaks to the big picture though, right? Which is you need people who for years and maybe even decades at a time are moving that football forward. And, you know, people like you and people like Tej and people like me and many other people around the state who've said, you know what? I want to help figure out and play a role in seeing that happen. That stuff compounds over years and years. You don't often see it right away, but 5 or 8 or 10 years later, it's like, wow, that stuff ended up producing something that really changed our region, changed our state. So thanks for all you did, Micah. That's certainly help push that football. Maybe pick up the football a little bit after you and keep running a little bit with it.
Oh, I know you guys will. I mean, I'll tell you what made me feel good is when I started listening. I know a few people are about to have exits that I helped when they were at their very beginning. And they're about to become angel investors. They're about to start putting their money back in the community. And that is happening now. And it's going to happen more. And that's when the flywheel spins up. And that's when people like you and I can kind of just get out of the way and just let it spin. And you suddenly get something that looks more like Boulder, Colorado, or, you know, you mentioned Nashville, which is an amazing area. And that they've done a wonderful job in the health tech space. And well, I want to congratulate you on successfully getting this fund raised. I know you've got a few things left to do to close it out, but you've met your minimum. You're doing deals, and I know a few of them you're involved with, and it's super to see you guys working throughout the state. And so that, I just want to thank you, Eric, for being on Startup Stories.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.